Hello, everyone. It is Derek G Speaks Volumes, and I'm so excited by this episode and the guests that I have on the show today. I mean that quite genuinely because it's such a new world for me. And the topic of today is one Ms. Taylor Swift, which we will get into a little bit, but I should introduce the guest in the virtual studio today. It's Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
So we were just speaking offline before this about how I've been wanting to explore and talk about Taylor Swift for a bit. And I came across Ginny a little while ago and then lost her in the feeds and couldn't find her and was asking people on my Discord, has anyone seen this this young woman doing this amazing stuff with Taylor Swift? And came across you again. So I had to reach out. And your handle is
the what? Thrifty Swifty.
That's right. Are you actually thrift?
Yes. So funny story, the account was supposed to start to share like two of my passions, Taylor Swift and thrifting, and the Taylor Swift content took off. And so the thrifting content fell to the wayside. But might be back one day.
I see. Cause I was like, okay, how does this relate to Taylor? Is it something about being like a cheaper Swiftie fan, you know, with the thrifty part of it, but
thrifting. No, and then you gain recognition and you can't change it. So be careful with whatever your username is.
And you've done quite well with your page or pages, hundreds of thousands of followers. Do you post like, I swear you post like 5+ times a day. Am I wrong?
I usually post a couple times a day. You're catching me on an off day. I didn't post at all today. So wow. I feel fake if I say it's every day. But yes, it's usually like 2 to 5 times a day and sometimes more. So
wow. Now, I think your page was particularly interesting to me because it kind of unlocks something in my head about Taylor Swift, because there's so much lore, there's so much history, backstory, mythology that you unpack. And I think where I'd like to start, because I've got a whole raft of questions to ask you, but I'd like to start, I guess, to introduce it to my audience and perhaps your audience, but about why this conversation is happening, which is my podcast and me in particular. I like to think about music and culture and how things interact and impact each other. And the more that I've grown my own channels and platforms and conversations, I've thought about music a lot deeper, because I'm a music fan of a certain bubble or of a certain niche. And there's a whole lot of stuff that I don't get, I don't listen to. And for the longest time, that was just like, I don't like this stuff, right? But the more I dig into music and the more that I speak to music fans and hear about all their stories, I'm like, okay, I've got it all wrong. It's impossible to like everything, obviously. And Taylor Swift is a really good example, because she is, it's someone for me, as I was growing up, I didn't relate to, for obvious reasons, maybe not obvious, but like, you know, being a man in his, you know, and going on a more like weirder path of music and going, thinking, oh, this is pop music, it's not for me, and not having anything to relate it to, or and so I just missed it, right? And then I kind of came full circle to be like, just because it's not something I listen to doesn't mean it's tremendously, tremendously significant. And Taylor Swift is one of the most important artists of her generation in so many facets. And I'm like, damn, I just missed all of that because I never dove into it. And so I was looking for, like, in on a gut level of like someone that could like talk to me about it in a way that is just open about it and wanting to learn. And why I'm excited is because it's like, I love learning about how things in music impacts people in different ways, and I love learning about very important things that I have no idea about. So that is the context of this discussion. So like, you are, you know, the fandom is call themselves Swifties, right? But you know, how long have you been a fan? From what age have you been a fan of Taylor Swift?
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Well, first of all, just thank you so much for having me and like letting me be part of this conversation, because I think the way you laid it out is so fascinating. And like, I think music is so personal in so many ways that it would be unreasonable to say that, yeah, like everyone must like or should like one particular artist or one particular type of music. But I really appreciate just the way you've laid out the significance and how someone can be impactful and significant on culture and society and music and artistry without necessarily being your cup of tea. So I'm excited to be here and just get to talk about it like through that lens, which is really interesting and fun for me. So thank you for having me. And I have been a Swiftie since 2006 when I was like 13 when I became a Swiftie, if it was 2006. And I remember, like, I guess my first like memory of listening to Taylor is I was on YouTube, like old school YouTube, watching music videos. And I think I was listening to someone else first, and then her Our Song music video came up, and I was like, wow, this is really catchy and like such a colorful music video, and it's so fun. And so then I started kind of looking for her other music and was really drawn into her music videos. And I really think ultimately her ability to storytell, which becomes really present when you take a song and create something visual from it, like a music video. But shortly after, you know, she only had one album at that point and just a couple, like a handful of music videos. So I went through those pretty quickly and then started listening to the rest of the album and was really drawn in by her ability to almost like, yeah, like paint pictures and storytell and like create this feeling of watching a music video, even when you were listening to just a static song. And so, that was kind of how I discovered her and how long I've been a fan. And I also think like I've definitely had kind of like my ups and downs through my fandom. Like I've had my times where I was like all Taylor all the time, and then times where I, you know, wasn't like, you know, would listen to other artists or other music. And it's been interesting, and it's been particularly interesting because I think that her styles of music have really like evolved and grown as I have too, which is really interesting. Like kind of when I was moving to the city for the first time, and it was like I was living in New York City. It was my like first real job, my first own apartment that I was renting, like all of those things was right when she dropped 1989. So it was her first pop album, and it was just very relatable. Like the song Welcome to New York came out a month after I moved to New York City, which is just still kind of blows my mind. But I remember listening to it like on the subway commuting to New York and just like feeling like I was in a movie. So that was like a big resurgence of like fandom for me because her music kind of went from the stuff that I was listening to like while I was studying or like that really country vibe to this really like pop vibe that seemed to fit the transition that I was going through in my life at the time. And it's been really interesting to me how I'm growing up about like 3 years behind Taylor. And with the cadence that her albums come out where they're like reflecting back, it's almost like I'm growing up with her, right? Because every time she releases an album, I'm 3 years behind her, and the music is 2 to 3 years behind her too. So, right. Yeah.
Wow, I have so many questions that come to mind, because she was known as a pop country artist, right? That was her first thing, like Tim McGraw, right? Was like one of the early or first singles or something like that.
Yes, and she was. It's interesting because she'll talk about how she moved to Nashville and she wanted to be a country artist, and at that time, this mold of like a young female country singer didn't really exist. We had had some like younger girl bands, but we didn't have like 15-year-old country singers the way that we had 15, 16, 17 year old pop singers. So with that, she kind of created this, like, she almost created her own genre in a way, right? Like, she really was country and she was pop, but she really, like, broke the mold, because there wasn't, and I actually even remember that when I was first listening to her and really was like, wow, I love this sound and I love this artist. And I was Googling, like, what artists are similar to Taylor Swift? And even when she had one album, they were like, no one really. Like, she's kind of doing something new. We don't really have these young female country artists in Nashville. And so I think with that, she, from the beginning, has had pop, like, pop remixes of all of her songs. And I think it was honestly, like, because everyone was sort of like, what do we do with this girl? Like, is this going to appeal to the country crowd, or who's going to listen to this? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's really interesting, like, as a foundational story, that it's, she was kind of breaking the rules from early on. I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was, like, young pop country artists weren't a thing. Do you...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is it safe to say that a lot of her music is autobiographical, or does it blur the lines? Because you were talking about, like, growing up with her, you hear a lot of stories and then you see a lot of lyrics and about referencing where she was in life and partners. Do you think she toes that line and has fun with that kind of interpretation, or is it, do you feel like she's really expressing where she is in life at the time?
Yeah. Oh, wow. There's, like, there's so many, like, angles I could take this. So cut me off if I start rambling.
Please, no, go ahead.
Very well might. But I think she very much is autobiographical in a lot of her songwriting, and more recently has kind of taken this method of being more of a storyteller and telling, like, stories that she's created, and now has sort of both of those types of music in her, or... yeah, both of those types of songs in her discography. But something that I find that I've recently been thinking about a lot is people have said, especially earlier on in her career, that what gave her her staying power or her success was the fact that she writes her own songs and they are autobiographical, and sort of gave this view into her life that we don't get from many other celebrities. Because so many singer-songwriters out there are singing, or so many singers out there are singing other people's songs that, like, other people have written. And Taylor was writing her own music, but then also was really raw with what she was writing and really honest. And has been very careful to not ever come out and directly say, like, this song is about this person or this time in my life. But there are so many, like, hints and clues that, you know, and for a while, I think she was actually the one that said this. She was like, you know, they kind of painted it as, like, a party trick, or like, I cheated the system. Like, that was the only reason that I was so big, was because I was, like, a walking tabloid and people could get, like, they could learn something about me that they wouldn't get anywhere else. And then she came out with Folklore and Evermore, and she has very much said over and over again, you know, I was in isolation, like, the whole world was shut down, and I was reading and listening to music and watching movies and TV shows, and that, in, like, inspired her to create stories. And she was like, let me play around with storytelling like I always have, but not telling my own stories. And when she released that album, and when she said that, there's still been so much back and forth over whether is she storytelling, is she telling someone else's stories, is she telling her own story, is it autobiographical? And I found it really interesting, because I actually said, kind of from the beginning, I was like, you know, this isn't something new that she's doing. She's been doing this since her debut album, where she's been gathering information and inspiration from everything around her and using it to create music. Like, I remember her first album comes out and she sings a song called Mary's Song, where she says, like, you were 87, I was 89. And so she's, you know, singing a story about these two people that fell in love at age 7 and then had a forever life together until they were in their 80s. And you're like, that hasn't happened to her yet. She used to introduce her now one of her most famous songs, Fearless, by saying, this is a song I wrote about the best first date that I never had. So even at that point, she was like, I'm imagining, like, I'm creating this story of like what I hope that looks like one day. And you can find examples of that from every single album up until her most recent one. So I think it's really interesting. Like, I think ultimately what it comes down to is what has made her successful is her ability to storytell in a relatable way. And whether it's because she's drawing on her own experiences or what she's seen from friends and family or TV shows or movies, it's like she ultimately just creates like worlds that you want to live in and you want to be a part of or that you find comfort in or inspiration in. And I think that's what's given her so much staying power and success.
It shows me, it's so interesting to hear all of this because I think it's, I don't know, in my world, it might not be discussed as much in your world, I'm sure it is a lot, but you can tell that she is supremely intelligent on multiple levels because you don't obviously connect with people for a sustained period of time without knowing how or having a sense of how, but then also like the impacts she's had on the industry, the impact she's had on live music and obviously record-breaking tours and all that sort of stuff. Credit to her and her team. I don't know much about her team, but I think what you said about staying power, because that was one of my questions around like, I'm not the expert in this world, but like when you look at Miley, who's obviously doing great, and people of her kind of similar age that usually have a window. Like, I had no idea that Selena was as massive as she is on Instagram. I looked her up the other day. Yeah. It's insane. But even Selena doesn't put out music right now or for a while. And Taylor has sustained. She's done this thing. She's obviously does a lot of things, but she's an artist first. She doesn't kind of evolve into other, you know, media enterprises. And the songwriting aspects, it makes so much sense. That is not something I was really that conscious of. I kind of knew about, but that it's all her. Like, it all comes from her. And there's that other, there's Jack Antonoff, who I saw on your Instagram you bumped into recently. That must have been exciting. Is it mostly like her, or is it other people that are kind of quite pivotal to her sound and writing, like Jack, as part of this growth or evolution or voice?
Yeah, I think something that I think more recently have come to admire about Taylor and her songwriting and just her like prowess as a businesswoman and just like the supreme intelligence she has, which I think is, yeah, it's very clear to me as well, is I think she's really from really early on looked at this as something that she is privileged to get to do, and has honed it as a craft in a way where she's always looking 13 steps ahead at every point in her life. And I think through that, like, she has pushed herself to try new types of sound, to write for other artists. Like, she's actually written songs for other artists as a way to test herself, right? And say, like, can I write like EDM music? And can I do like pop music before she fully made this like pop transition? Can I do alternative? Can I do folk? And has reached out to partner with people so that she can continue to learn and like grow her craft. And so I think Jack has been hugely influential on her. I think they're just such close friends. And like at this point, I'm sure they can almost like musically read each other's minds. Like there's some videos behind the scenes of them songwriting and they're so in sync. And I think that he really influenced her transition into pop music, like having, like really starting with 1989 and then staying through, I think, really everything she's created since then. He's had a hand in to some extent, but I think like she's worked with other artists as well. And I think their impact on her has been really notable as well. So recently she has worked really closely with Aaron Dessner, who is part of The National. And she's worked with The National as well, like all of the members of that band.
Which seems like such a curveball from like a, you wouldn't think that either would want to work with each other.
Yes, I totally agree. And it was when that album Folklore came out and was such a pivot from Lover. Like Lover was like bubblegum pop kind of music. And then Folklore came out and that was one of those times that it was really interesting and almost like almost this air of like kind of creepiness to it where I was like, I was not in a place to be listening to anything that sounded like Lover, right? Like we were in the middle of this COVID pandemic. We were all stuck inside. I personally was like mentally not having the best time and had been waking up every morning and putting on The National, Phoebe Bridgers, like indie music, indie folk music and like chilling and like calming. And then she released this album and I was like, it was such a curveball. I didn't see it coming, but it was so interesting because I was like, somehow yet again, she met me exactly where I am. And it kind of blew my mind.
Dropping in for a quick word from our sponsor, Turntable Lab. I'm never going to forget my first sponsor. You know, someone actually, I was out, a young man said to me, hey, what needle should I get? And how do they make a difference? It was in a party and it was really difficult to answer when you're shouting at someone why a good needle is important. But if you want to know why a good needle is important, then just head to turntablelab.com. They have been the trusted source for audio gear and records for 20 years online. And they specialize in everything from turntables to turntable setups and accessories. So if you're someone that knows a lot and wants some really high-end stuff, if you're a beginner and you just want to know where to get started, Turntable Lab is the place to be. They've also got a website, or part of the website, called The Lab, which has over 100,000 records. And as part of this sponsorship, you can take advantage of the 4 or more deal, where you can take 10% off when you purchase 4 or more records at turntablelab.com. If you want to know my recommendations, humble recommendations, it's turntablelab.com/Derek, because I say humble because I put things on that list that you might be interested in, that I'm interested in, that I would buy for myself. I didn't put anything on there that's just like my dream things that I would buy, because I don't know. I'm a long way away from that. So you can probably relate to that. Anyway, thank you again. That's the sponsor. Back to the episode. I hate to bring up this next person because it's very not even contentious. It's like not good in the a Swiftie sphere, but I can't help think that the similarities between her and Kanye West, I'll explain why. Obviously, we know why it's like almost like a bad word because of what happened with her and him at the MTV Music Awards, I want to say.
Yeah, the VMAs.
VMAs. But, you know, as someone who wasn't listening to Taylor but was listening to Kanye, I don't anymore. I can't anymore with all that he does now. But before all of that, all of those shenanigans, it very much was, he had changed the face and look of hip hop and then kept reinventing himself with different sounds, whether it's with auto-tune and singing, whether it's like quite like experimental industrial sounds. And somewhat autobiographical. Sometimes there's, you know, the album where he talks about being bipolar and things. But what I related to, or perhaps not related to, but was amazed by is like an artist that was hungry to evolve and to bring people into his world that suited that hunger and desire to learn, as you say, to challenge himself and therefore challenge the listener as well. And am I wrong? Is it kind of like, in a strange way, they're not as different as it might be led to believe?
Yeah, I think similarly, I definitely haven't listened to Kanye, I want to say, in a while now, just given, I mean, the same thing that you said, right? And someone commented the other day, like, they were like, I think I saw you the other day, but I couldn't say hi because I was with like a Kanye stan. And my boyfriend was like, who is a Kanye stan now? Like,
I was like, there's no excuse.
Yeah, exactly. But I think before that, like, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I feel like I think Taylor has set some really healthy boundaries herself in terms of like not talking about that in interviews anymore, which I think makes sense, right? And I also think that that is one of the ways that she's had the staying power that she has, is her ability to like learn and evolve, right? Like, she knows how to set boundaries, when to set boundaries, when to keep things private. She's seen like how not keeping enough private, like what that can lead to for her own mental health. So I definitely understand her, you know, very strict boundary that it's like not something that she's going to talk about in interviews or with the media or anything like that. But I think something that I wouldn't be surprised by is if that is why she tried to mend that fence, right? Like, they had this huge falling out after the VMAs, and, you know, no matter what way you look at it or slice it. And like, I've had a lot of really like intellectual conversations with friends about like what he was actually trying to say in that moment, and if that might have been justified, and it was more the means that were completely inappropriate, right? Like, the thought there was really like, are we recognizing Black women and Black artists the way that we are white women and white artists? And, you know, back 13 years ago, I mean, today we even aren't really, and 13 years ago, we definitely weren't. But despite that, what he actually did was completely inappropriate, especially based on the fact that, you know, she's a 19-year-old kid.
Insane.
So it was crazy. But I do think that potentially kind of what brought us to this conversation, so like, do they have more in common than people would even want to play around with admitting, especially Swifties, because like you said, it's like a taboo word. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the reason why sort of this VMA incident happened. And then she actually went to lengths to try and mend this fence and to potentially like work with him in different ways, and then was burned again so badly. And that's something that she's written about in a lot of songs. So a lot of songs on Reputation, she speaks to that directly, like saying, like, I invited you in and then you threw me out, locked the door, and like threw a feast and just like locked me out of my own kingdom and all of that. So, but I think I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, is what I'm saying, is if Taylor potentially recognized that as well. And, you know, as we were speaking to earlier, she has this hunger to work with the best, but also because she wants to learn from the best, right? So when she sought out Aaron Dessner and Matt Berenger, Bon Iver, just like Justin Vernon, she was saying, this is something that I think I can do, I want to do, but I want to learn from someone who's done it incredibly well, someone who has been like accoladed and awarded. So let's do this together. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was something that she was thinking about, right? Like, we do have these things in common and you have done this really well. And so, yeah, like, let's be allies instead of enemies.
No need to be adversarial when you're essentially the two leaders of your spaces in many regards. So like, it's somewhat known, like, you know, it was funny you talk about Kanye stans, which is questionable at this point. But, you know, there's a lot of theories whenever he, like, puts himself out there that he's promoting something, that he's, like, if he does something shocking, it's like, okay, well, what's around the corner that is about to come out? Not in the same way, because Taylor doesn't put out shocking things. I do see, especially, like, you know, on your channels or others, like, she's here and doing this, and she doesn't do this unless she wants to be seen doing this. She uses herself as that canvas, is that she doesn't, you know, say to culture, this is wrong and therefore you should think about this. She's more like, you should pay attention to this, or I'm with this person now. And how much of that is strategic versus coincidental, that she is going out with a friend and having a coffee? Or is that friend someone who she worked with 5 years ago that ends up being someone she's recording the next album, which ends up coming true? Like, how strategic is she, or is that?
Yeah, I think that's actually something else that to some extent she's been doing for a very long time, like leaving these like hints and clues and Easter eggs. And it's evolved and evolved and evolved like a snowball down a hill, right? And I think it started with something really obvious where she was like, my lyrics are really important to me. I want people to read my lyrics. So I'm going to hide a little secret bit of information about every song in the liner notes. And so if people read the lyrics, they get a little additional piece of information about this song. And people loved it. And it went, you know, it got the recognition that it, that whatever the equivalent of going viral was in 2010. And it's snowballed. And I think that like the creation and like the rise of social media and TikTok, and especially TikTok, where you can have, and I take a moment every once in a while and I just think about like the sheer vastness that is TikTok, and how like my TikTok, like I open this app and it is completely different than when my dad opens it, because like my dad has TikTok too, and it's completely different. Like his is like woodworking and DIY, and I have DIY stuff, but his is like woodworking and like really scientific cooking videos and stuff. And we just have all these like little niches. And even to your point, like you and I ultimately are both in this like music entertainment space on TikTok, but even for that, like we had this like kind of moment of overlap, and then like you said, you were like, I can't find this girl anymore. Like, I don't know where this creator went that I saw this one time. And your corner and my corner are actually like very closely associated, and it's still that big that there was a very little intersection. So I think that with that, like this influence that she's had on TikTok has allowed this like Easter egging and these clues to just snowball even more, because every time she does do something, like every time she gets a coffee or goes out to dinner or, you know, winks at the end of a performance or something, there are hundreds of thousands of people that are talking about it on TikTok. And so it's all this just like additional publicity for her. So I think it's both. Like, I think she's definitely really intentionally doing stuff. And a lot of the time I'll kind of gut check what I think with my sister, who is incredibly intelligent and is, I call her like a casual Taylor Swift fan. She's not on TikTok. She doesn't have any social media, but she loves Taylor's music, and she was an English major, and she's incredibly intelligent. And, you know, I'll show her a picture and I'll be like, look, Taylor was out in your neighborhood. And she'll say like, oh, like how funny, she has a butterfly on her jeans, which is like such a basic symbol for rebirth. Like, and then it all, and that's what, you know, I'm like, okay, so I wasn't crazy for thinking that, right? Like that does look like it was intentional. And my sister's like, oh yeah, definitely. So I think a lot of it is intentional, but I also think that there are times where it's not, and she's just basking in how much her business grows because of this like system that she's created of.
I got you. That's really helpful to know, because like, I can see that, like, especially with like Frank Ocean and Coachella, just how many Frankophiles or whatever we call them came out to use him as content without a huge amount of basis. And like, I heard this, I heard that. And I think that what I think there's quite a few Swifties on TikTok, but I feel like of the ones maybe I'm reaching because I've found more of a bond with your content, is that I think you stand alone in terms of, it seems like you're, like you said, you're a lot more considered, and you're not just gonna whip something up that you think is gonna get you views. You're passionate about it, you're researched about it, but there's caution there to not just try to game it, because I think it doesn't, people see through that. There are people recently in particular that create a lot of controversy off the back of being a Swiftie. One in particular, I'll just mention it because why not? Like a gentleman that compared 1989 to Pimp a Butterfly, and set off a whole big, micro drama on TikTok, but it felt large, which was somewhat unnecessary, and painted Swifties to be like, at worst, racist, you know? But not that Swifties are, but that was like, he painted it in such a way, it's like, Taylor deserves everything and Kendrick maybe just do better, which is just like obviously so just baity. How does it feel like as a Swiftie in this world of people that like that kind of can represent a fan base and an individual and you know, yourself, and how does it feel to be part of that? How does it feel to represent it and be seen in it?
Yeah, I think one thing that I try and do on my page very much is to create a space where I am more cautious, I am more well-researched, and I also think that you can very much like, and I mean, this is how this conversation started, which is like, you can love something without tearing something else down, and you can respect something without loving it, and you can recognize like its impact and its cultural significance. And I think, you know, music is another microcosm of what we were just speaking of with TikTok, that it's so vast and it's so large that there are all these different corners that are like really special and really wonderful. And I don't find the need to like rip one down to put another one up. And that's something I've always been really clear about. And I also think like some of the things that I will say, an uncle at Thanksgiving or something who's like, well, she just writes songs about her exes, like, she, you know, something like that, like makes a little comment like that. And when I'm going to defend that in a way that is intelligent and logical, some of the evidence that I'm using to defend that is, you know, something that I'll give an example. It was at the Grammys this year, Taylor was up for Songwriter of the Year, and she's now been nominated for that. She's tied for the most ever nominations, but she's the only person that has that many nominations that has never won. And it's and it's super interesting because she's known for her songwriting. And like repeatedly people have said she's one of the most prolific songwriters of our generation.
Yes.
And so I was in researching to create, you know, before this Grammy was announced, I was researching all of her past instances of this to see where she had been nominated in the past. And the one, as I'm going through, that really surprised me the most is that her song Cardigan was nominated for the Songwriting Award at the Grammys in 2020. And I was like, you know, that song is really phenomenal. Like the lyrics in it, like it's got all of these vocabulary, like big vocabulary words, these rhyme schemes that you would never expect. Mm. The chorus doesn't even repeat. It's like a really well-crafted song. And I go to look at which song won in 2020, and it was I Can't Breathe by her. And I was just like, you want to talk about the song of 2020 in terms of songwriting? There isn't another option out there. And so, you know, people were commenting that on my post, and they were like, Cardigan was robbed in 2020. And I was like, you know what, actually it really wasn't. And it's something I say about the Folklore album, which also won Album of the Year in 2020, where I've said that was undeniably and unquestionably the album of the year because it encompassed 2020 as a year. It encompassed she wrote a song about the COVID pandemic. Like, she switched her entire genre and her style and the whole marketing of the album to create an album that was appropriate for a world that was shut down. And just everything about it encompassed what the world was going through and what we were all feeling in 2020, which to me, I was like, this makes this truly album of this year. And I felt the same way about her song, H-E-R, I Can't Breathe. I was like, that is the song writing of this year. It's the song of this year. And
yes,
I'm the biggest Swiftie out there, but you're not going to convince me otherwise. So I think there's a way. I get saddened too when I kind of see this like pitting of people against each other. And I'm like, you know, we can recognize like someone's power and strength and like the staying power they have, their cultural significance and impact, without like tearing down other work that's out there. And so I try and embody that on my page as much as I can, and like really just stay, you know, like a hype Taylor up and pump her up. And like, you know, I was like, I hope she wins the songwriting award this year. But when she didn't, you know, there was a picture of her congratulating Bonnie Raitt. So it's like, if she's out there saying, congrats, you wrote a beautiful song, like, shouldn't we all be doing the same thing?
Yes. So. And perhaps, I love that way of thinking. And I think that's perhaps why I related to your content, is that there was that measured understanding of not everything goes your way. There's a reality to it. Sometimes it's crazy, but also like, it's just an awards show. Like, it's, there's so many things to it. And I think, what was I going to say? I feel like that as I go down this path and speaking to you, and as someone that has formed, what I said at the beginning, a community and a discussion around music, is that I do feel like, I think it's not like a reach to say that there is an underlying misogyny to music criticism and commentary, because the loudest voices are usually old men. And pop music that can move a whole generation of largely, but not exclusively, young women is deemed as illegitimate, insignificant, because it's talk. They'll boil it down to exes and boys and love. And obviously it's not just that, but there's also like, there's so much expression in Taylor that is not meant for anyone else but her audience. That it's so interesting you saying that about like being nominated so many times and not winning.
Yeah.
And just because it's not for you doesn't mean that it hasn't, you know, that stadium show she did in Nashville was insane. Like, I don't know if she's at her peak now, but it feels like it's like just fever pitch. And maybe she could, there's even higher to go, but it's just like she sells out multiple stadiums, just her as an artist, not as a group or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And you were there. How did it feel?
Yeah, the Eras Tour has been just a pinnacle. And like, I think every time we think Taylor can't top herself, she does. So I don't know what's next, but I do know with this show, like I went opening night, and then I went in Nashville. And leading up to it, like I was talking with my friends and like my community members, just saying like, so much about this is just groundbreaking, right? Like someone who's 33 years old, being able to have enough music to call a tour the Eras Tour is already just like unheard of. And then on top of that, to like fill the stadiums that she filled, have all the fans that don't, like how many people want to go that can't go because there isn't enough space. And, you know, she already more than doubled the size of her last tour. Like it's just, it's really unheard of. And leading up to it, I told a lot of people, I was like, you know, I'm really curious to see what she does, because I don't know how she's going to touch on every era, making this an Eras Tour in a show of this length. Well, also, and my boyfriend brought up Bruce Springsteen. He's a big Springsteen fan. And he was like, you know, Springsteen plays for 3-4 hours sometimes. And I was like, yes. And I I know Taylor can do that and I want her to do that. But I was like, you know, Springsteen also like sits at a piano or on a guitar. I was like, Taylor puts on a show. Like she from her very first tour, she has ball gowns and like she's in the air. She's like floating around. She's running up and down a stage. And I was like,
she's in heels.
Yes, she's in heels. Great. Like, absolutely. And I was like, I just don't know. I was like, I don't know if it's physically possible to do that for 3.5 hours. And then lo and behold, we saw the show. And on opening night, I was there with my friend. And I remember, like, we got to Folklore, which is, you know, you still have like 3 parts of the set after that. And I was like, I can't believe she hasn't even sung a single song from her Midnight's album yet. Wow. Which is her most recent album. I was like, it's been 2.5 hours and she hasn't sang one song from that. And then after returning, even my, like my boyfriend's dad was like, that tour is going to go down in history. Like that is going to be, people are going to be talking about it for a long time. And it truly was just like for someone to be in heels, not lip syncing, like singing every single song, running up and down the stage. Like, I think it's like 30 different costumes she has or something crazy like that. And lots of them are like, oh, she adds a jacket or she, but it's like, it's just a phenomenon. And you honestly, like, you feel like you're in an immersive movie or something. And it's, it was really just, it was absolutely amazing. And then a whole different level when you throw the rain in there. So,
extreme weather event. That then the show's starting at 10:30, right?
Yes, yeah, starting at 10:30.
I want to switch gears because this is an important topic to discuss as we are like almost 45 minutes in. Is Taylor's versions?
Yes,
I'll say no more than that. Could you explain that to the audience, please? Yes. It's important. It's huge for her career. Huge.
Yes. So the Taylor's versions are, Taylor was signed to a record label for her first 6 albums, and she had signed a 6-album deal with them, 6 albums and I believe 5 tours. And then when she left that label, she wanted to own her own music and was very much barred from doing so. She was offered a couple ways that she would be allowed to own it, but she was offered no way to buy her music outright, whereas other people ultimately were offered that. And that alone to me was really fascinating, just learning about that, because it felt like this really weird piece of ownership. Like I was like, I can't imagine. So she owns the songs that she's written, but she does not own the recordings. And that was just like, I was learning about that for the first time, like as Taylor was going through this. And so I think that's like the first piece of all of this is the way that she, even on something so painful like that, like brought her fans along, I think speaks to how vulnerable she is, but also like what an incredible businesswoman she is, because bringing her fans along is what made this successful. And I'll get to that. But with her music being sold to someone else, the only way that she can gain ownership again is if she re-records her albums. And there were stipulations in place there. She had to wait 5 years after like the original was released. So they were all like, upon leaving, she could immediately re-record 4 of them and then had to wait on the, or 5 of them, she had to wait on the 6th one. But what she says is now, if you see anything with Taylor's version after it, it means that she owns it. So she has asked in not so many words, but I think the fandom understands that she is asking that once she's released a Taylor's version, that we support her by streaming that version instead of her, what the fandom has come known to call the stolen versions. So the older versions. And she's not the first person who has tried to re-record her music, but she is by far the most, I would say the most successful. Like she's truly, she's topped charts with these re-records. She's won Grammys with them. She's broken records with them. She broke an all-time streaming record that was held by her own album by re-releasing a re-recorded album, which was just unheard of. And she's really made it a way where each one that she's releasing is both allowing fans to relive the original experience, but also she's creating brand new music with it.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. And that's another tangent that I could go on, but I'll leave it there for questions in case I didn't explain that well.
Oh, no, perfectly. And it, like, before learning about more of her stuff, I would have said this was going to be her most important legacy. It may be, but I think there's more to the music and the impact of her as a person. But, like, almost training the fan base on masters and publishing and ownership, record labels, and has been, like, a quantum shift. And then to have two of the same albums, not the same, but, you know, ostensibly the same album out, and people just know what to do with that and support that and buy that is incredible business, as well as just being like, it's a great narrative as well. Not that she planned for that narrative, but has now used that to her advantage in a good way, I would argue.
Yeah. But what's so fascinating is she's now, the fans miss her old music. So it's actually like a conversation, and I'll get it a fair amount, especially it's interesting with Speak Now, which is coming out soon, even more so than Fearless. Fans are really like nervous about losing the original. They're like, we love that. Like, they're like her vulnerability, her, like, there's this like voice shake that she has in one of the songs that it truly sounds like she's about to start crying. And people are just like heartbroken to lose that vulnerability. So what she's done is she has devalued her music for anyone except for herself to own. And the moment that she owns it, which I really think she will, it will go right back up in value to what it's actually worth. But it is now not profitable for anyone except for her to own that music the moment that the last re-record comes out, which is, I mean, life-changing for the industry. Like, that has never been heard of, something like that happening before. So it's really fascinating to me.
That blew my mind, because you're so right, because it's like she, you know, arguably is messing with people's memories and experiences by creating something new, even though it's, you know, the same, and going, but this is important for me and it's important for a lot of people and the industry. And you're right. Yeah. It's short-term devaluing for a long-term impact and story. And like, not being overly familiar with Red and then Taylor's version of Red, how similar, like, can you enjoy it and be like, this is Red as in Taylor's version? Or are you like, oh, this sounds weird, this sounds different, oh, she didn't do this here, where, or is she really trying to copy it and you can't tell the difference?
It's super interesting. For the most part, I think she's truly trying to like copy it. And most of them, I can hear a little bit of a difference, but really barely any. And I even remember Fearless came out before I was even on TikTok. And my sister and I like stayed up to listen to the first song that was released. And then we were like, I don't really hear the difference. Like, do you hear the difference? And we were like, no, we really don't. And then There are, of course, the vault tracks, which I think is a different discussion. And then there are, each album so far has probably like one song that sounds pretty different. On Red, it was Girl at Home, which performed the worst on that album originally. And she changed like some pieces of that, which was interesting.
Wow, okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
That was really interesting to hear. And people were like, it was surprising, but exciting. But I think ultimately, if the goal is to get people to stream her version, she has to make them as close as possible, which is mostly what she's been doing. And then there are a couple instances where fans will kind of playfully poke fun at her, where they'll be like, well, this doesn't sound the same. And like, we miss the old version. But I think she's done a pretty impressive job of, for the most part, like, it's hard to tell just when a song comes on if it's the old one or the new one.
Wow. I did wonder that, of like, because she's like, I didn't touch on it too much when you talked about the snowball of the Easter eggs, but I was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to drop things in the new versions for people to pick up on. But I guess that would kind of ruin it if there's suddenly like a whisper of something in 2022 about an album that she recorded in I don't know, 2010 or whatever. So that's fascinating. And I think that it's, I don't know. No one else has, maybe people have done it, but no one's really done it to this extent. And
no, I've researched it, and it's, people have done it, but not to this extent. And it's like, I think Elton John won a Grammy for a re-recorded song. I believe it was Elton John, but it was like specifically for like remastering a song. So the purpose was for it to not sound the same. Yeah. And wow. I think to your point with like the Easter eggs, what I found really interesting, and it's kind of Easter eggs, and it's kind of that, like, how do you make a song that was written 13 years ago work today? I think she's done that really well with the vault tracks. So the songs that she's adding that were written back then, but are brand new.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many of them are on
She has six per album. So I think she has six for Fearless and six for Red. And then she just announced six for Speak Now.
Right. Okay. It's smart because there's additional content or like,
yes, you know,
that makes it new again as well.
Ultimately what she won her Grammy for was for brand new content. So I did find that interesting because I think the Grammys were probably in a confused place, like not sure if they were able to award. So it was interesting.
Yeah, true. It like raises a lot of questions. You also make me think, man, the record labels are probably like, in the contracts, they're not putting in that you can re-record your tracks after this long. It's going to be like after like 20 years now because of this.
Yeah.
She's changed a lot for the good, but then record labels probably like, oh shit. Like,
she's actually influenced it on both sides, which I was going to say earlier, but it's been really interesting, is that a lot of young artists are now going into these negotiations asking for ownership. And then on the flip side, labels are doing exactly what you said, which is trying to extend the period of time before you're allowed to re-record. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see how this shakes out for different artists, I think.
Yeah, I definitely observe a divergence in music and artists and rights. In one hand, artists like really wanting ownership, but then also there's so much music than ever that you kind of, people also sign with majors because it's like, maybe seems like the only way you could cut through all the noise as well. So it's a really weird place, but she's definitely impacted that in a very significant way. I have two more questions because we're speaking for a while. Second last one is around like mentorship and being the, I don't know if mother or godmother or whatever we want to call it is, but like, it feels like she's definitely at a place where she can, she is the biggest in her world where she can tap someone and change their careers in certain ways, or like, you know, have Phoebe Bridgers on a song, who was significant in her own right, but nowhere near as where she is now. Like, can you speak on that at all, about her as a mentor, as someone that is like, you know, magnanimous enough to like share her spotlight a little bit and be that person for someone else?
Yeah, it's something I've found very interesting about how she's been selecting collaborators on her, actually specifically on her re-recorded albums, is she has, I believe, very intentionally been picking one collaborator who's really nostalgic from the time period. So on Fearless, which is like, you know, it's the most awarded country album in history, she did one collaboration with Keith Urban. So it was this very nostalgic feel, like this old school country artist. And then the other collaboration she did was Maren Morris, who is a young female country singer. So very much one of those mentees that kind of came after Taylor Swift had kind of created this new path of like, country singers don't have to be 40 or 50. Like they can be young. They can be, we can have like young female country singers, and we can have this like hybrid country pop singer. So she brought Maren Morrison. And then on Red, she did a collaboration with Ed Sheeran, who was an original collaborator on Red. And she did a second collaboration with him. And then she brought in Phoebe Bridgers. And so I found it really interesting and admirable that it seemed very intentional to me that she was picking, going out and picking young female artists that she knew she could uplift through a collaboration, right? She knew if I put this person on my song, like my fans are going to fall in love with them too. And like through that, she's been very humble and very complimentary, right? Like she's, every time she introduces Nothing New with Phoebe Bridgers, she says like, how lucky am I that Phoebe's wrote this song with me and that she's here singing this song with me. And like, I'm so blessed that I have a friend like Phoebe. And she'll do the same for Maren Morris. Like, she's like, this is this wonderful artist. She'll call out other music of theirs. When they release new music, she'll, you know, put it on her Instagram story and say like, listening nonstop. And I think it's really beautiful, and it's something that I've really appreciated because I think it's a newer shift she's made. And I think it's an example of her learning, right? Like saying, I've changed so many things for women in music, and I've had such a hard time as a woman in music. I've faced misogyny, I've faced sexism, and actually saying like, well, now that I'm here, like, how can I change that? And she had been criticized in the past for not having female collaborators or not giving female collaborators verses on songs. So she would give her male collaborators a whole verse, and then her female collaborators would just sing background vocals. I see. And then Nothing New, Phoebe had a verse. And I think it's been really exciting for me to see how she's using so much of her like star power to uplift all of these young female artists. And yeah, it makes me really hopeful, I think, more than anything.
I'm really excited to see the next 10, 15, 20 years of her career. Like she's either a Bruce Springsteen type that will continue putting out records for the remainder of her life. I think about the NBA a lot, and some people become executives and owners of teams and GMs, and I wonder if she'll maybe one day be like, I'm going to start a label, or maybe that's antithetical to her, but like, you know, I'm going to start something and I'm going to bring up the next people and I'm as big as humanly possible. And now I've done my dash. I think it's all there for her.
Own their music. Like that's going to be part of her label or something like that. They come here and they own their music.
Seeing what she's achieved, it could totally make sense to me that she could be like in the whatever third phase of her career, a billionaire executive. I don't know. Not that she might not want that. Who knows? But I guess this my last question is around impact and legacy. It's, you know, like you said, she's 33. She's still young and has a long way to go. But as it stands, as of today in May 2023, like, what do you think her long-lasting legacy will be or is currently?
Yeah. I do think the impact she's had on the music industry will absolutely be one. I think the way that she's reclaimed her music and thus, like, you know, made changes on both ends, I really do think is going to be something that is, and I've already spoken to people. Like I was at Thanksgiving, like a Thanksgiving dinner. And one of the guests there was like, oh, I'm at NYU and I'm studying, like I'm doing a music business major. And I was like, okay, I have to ask, like, has Taylor Swift ever come up? And I did it like very lightly because I wanted to know what they actually were going to say. And she was like, yeah, I'm not a fan, but I find her fascinating. And we talk about her so much in my class. So I think that legacy is definitely going to continue. And I absolutely think that some of her songs will be listened to for, like, I think they are just going to have incredible staying power. And I think she's already showing that with the re-records. Like, a lot of music that came out in the 2010s, you know, there's a whole additional corner of TikTok that is lovingly making fun of that music, you know? Like, they're like, can you believe we listened to this? Or, like, let me put this on. And doesn't this just evoke, like, leg warmers? And, like, you know, it just, you hear it and it just evokes the feeling of the 2000s or 2010s. And it's interesting that her music already has some of that staying power. Like, you listen to some of it that truly came out like 13 to 15 to 17 years ago, and it still sounds just as good today as it did then. And I think that is going, I think a lot of her songs are really going to be everlasting like that. And that, you know, we're going to be listening to in 50 years and not necessarily as oldies, but just as like, oh, this really great song. Very much like Springsteen or the Beatles, or, you know,
beautiful. What, I know I said last question, but what's the one album for myself or my listeners, if you had to pick one, that we should listen to, that you feel like is a good one to sink your teeth into?
Oh, it is a hard question because she has reinvented so many times. But I think if you are truly a first time listener and really want a taste of, like, who is Taylor Swift, I would actually say Red, Taylor's version, because that song is, or that album now has won Grammy, but was Grammy-less, controversially so. But people largely said it was because it was confusing. And I actually think that's what makes it such a great starting place, because you have songs there that are old school country Taylor, you have songs that are pop Taylor, and you even have like that Phoebe Bridgers collaboration, which is indie folk Taylor. So I really think it gives you like a taste of every type of song that she's created. So if I can only pick one, I'm going to go with that one.
I love that so much. Yeah. Ginny speaks volumes. I've learned so much. This is everything that I'd hoped for and more, to be honest.
Well, me too. This was so enjoyable to just speak to someone who's as nerdy about music as I am, but doesn't already know everything that I'm saying. So it was lovely.
I think that's, like I said, this is the third time saying it now. This is why I was so excited to speak to you, because it's like there's so much crossover, but also not at all. And it's like it means a lot that we can have this conversation in a way that is so deep and rich and significant in its text, and come from so many different angles. And yeah, good luck with all that you do. Thrifty Swifty everywhere.
Yes.
Did you want to promote anything or share anything else as we
I think just if you are following, thank you. And keep following, and thanks for, everyone for letting me be a nerd about something I love. So it's really special, and I can't believe that people want to listen. So it's exciting for me.
Hell yeah. And that's the kind of the beauty of TikTok, which I've benefited from as well, nerding out about something that I thought was just for me, but is now for a lot of people.
Yeah, so. It's crazy. It's really amazing. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Ginny. It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you everyone for listening. I hope you've learned a lot, and listen to Red Taylor's version, which I will do after this. Thank you all again, and see you next week.